This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
You know, over the years, we've had some great guests on this program, and one notable example was a couple weeks ago, investigative journalist Jefferson Morley joined us, and we spoke about his book, Snowstorm in August, a little-known tale of race riots that took place in our nation's capital in 1835, which was something of a deviation from our previous conversations with Mr. Morley, which concerned his prior works of a more contemporary nature, biographies he had previously done on Winston Scott, and also Richard Helms, and also James Angleton, all three figures peripherally related to the JFK assassination. Mr. Morley runs the JFK Facts site, which is an excellent one. We cannot recommend to you highly enough. And in our second segment today, we're going to return to speaking with Jeff Morley about that more contemporary topic. He is always a great guest, and we highly recommend you stick around for that. But at the moment, I think we're going to take a dive into something we have not done in a while, which is to start the program with the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Are you sure?
Yes. Why don't you cue the music?
Don't tell me what to do. Now I'm going to cue the music.
Thanks. According to the Week magazine, it was a good week a few weeks back for, well, I guess you'd say seeing new perspectives. The story is that the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals has asked the nation's largest maker of amusement park carousels to stop using fake horses for seats. Yes, PETA is saying that such rides normalize the use of animals as conveyances and amusements. In a letter to the Kansas-based Chance Rides Company, PETA suggests replacing animal seats with spaceships, cars, or rainbows. And no, Radio Parallax is somewhat unclear as to how it is you're going to sit on a rainbow. These are described by PETA as being just as enchanting and not celebrating the exploitation of sentient beings.
I guess using real horses is out.
I would say so. And I think we'll clump together some goods, some bads, and some uglies. So for good item number two, we'll call in this case a good week for standards. Well, at least at Dartmouth University, which reportedly will now, again, make applicants take an SAT or ACT exam. They cited research that test scores are predictive of first-year college performances at selective colleges and universities, which to us here at Radio Parallax doesn't seem like news, but we do note that in 2020, all eight Ivy League universities dropped the entry exam requirement. Some 1,900 other institutions that offer bachelor's degree programs are now, quote, test optional, unquote. And it was also a good week, I think this last week, for spin, I guess you'd say, with the news that a Missouri gubernatorial candidate is dismissing claims that he's a cross-burning KKK member. He's calling that misinformation. Republican Daryl McClanahan admits that recently surfaced photos do show him and a white-hooded figure giving Nazi salutes before a large burning cross, but he says he was only an honorary member of the Klan and the photos were taken at a, quote, Christian identity cross-lighting ceremony, unquote, which is, of course, quite different than a white supremacist cross-burning.
Completely.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to see anybody would mix those two up. And speaking of being mixed up, it was apparently a bad week last week for knowledge of astronomy when a Texas Tech defensive back named Tyler Owens, who evidently was a standout at last week's NFL Combine, told reporters he doesn't believe in space. Owens, age 22, explained that he's real religious, and so I don't think there's other planets and stuff like that. We're assuming that no reporters waited till dark and then took Mr. Owens out to look at, say, Jupiter in the western sky, which is pretty undeniably another planet and stuff like that. It was also a bad week a couple weeks back for keeping it together after a Las Vegas man arrested on suspicion of a DUI lent weight to those suspicions by urinating on the leg of the arresting officer. Yeah, it turns out that Frank Afoa now faces multiple charges, including, quote, unlawful acts related to human excrement or bodily fluid, unquote. It was also apparently a bad week for relaxing while listening to music, with the news that, according to the Washington Post, since 1990, the average length of a song on the Billboard Hot 100 has dropped from over 4 minutes to about 3 minutes. Listeners on streaming platforms are interested for 2 minutes, and then they want to switch the next thing, said songwriter Erica Nuri Taylor. Yes, I think it's pretty clear, Mr. McMillan, these days, Inagata De Vita would not make the Billboard Top 100. But then if you think about it, it's a miracle that it ever did. And among other things that it was an ugly week for, we have from several weeks back, I guess you'd say political correctness. The story is that the Veterans Affairs Department has nixed a memo. Or maybe this is striking a blow for political correctness. I don't know. It was aimed at banning VA displays of that iconic photo that shows a sailor kissing a woman in Times Square at the end of World War II. The memo said the photo, quote, depicts a non-consensual act and violates VA policy. That's because the sailor apparently didn't ask the woman if he could kiss her. And no, we don't know how they established that, but officials later said the memo was not sanctioned and should not have been sent out.
Good.
In our opinion, it was an ugly week recently for wedding novelties, I guess you'd say. According to the Wall Street Journal, a growing number of brides and grooms are using hawks, falcons, and other birds of prey as ring bearers on their big day. They cite Jonathan Gonzalez, a falconer from Long Beach, California, who charges $1,200 and up for a wedding service. Carrying a pouch with the ring, the raptors fly down the aisle and land on the arm of the bride, groom, or best man. And we presume not on top of any local scurrying rodents. Gonzalez has warned his clients that his falcons and owls aren't 100% predictable, but states that no major mishaps have occurred. He said they have never gotten poop on a dress. Oh, it's a nice day for a white wedding. Ooh, what's a nice day to start. And it was an ugly week, we'd have to say, for what's being described as pure imagination, with the news that children were left in tears by a $44 a ticket Willy Wonka-themed, quote, immersion experience, unquote, in Scotland. Ads promoted a candy-filled wonderland, but guests complained that they found a sparsely decorated warehouse that some likened to a meth lab. All right, let's accelerate out of the good and the bad and the ugly into some items that are maybe none of the above, maybe all the above, but shall we say a little off. Gizmodo is now reporting that airplane mode is a myth. Yes, for years we've been told that we must switch our phones into, quote, airplane mode, unquote, upon boarding because a phone signal could interfere with a plane's navigation system. I never believed this. The idea traces back to 1991 when the Federal Communications Commission banned cell phones on planes, citing as their reason ground network interference. By 2005, the FCC had acknowledged that modern phones don't pose any risk, but the myth persisted. Efforts by the FCC to drop the ban have been shot down. Why? Well, because airlines believe people won't stop yapping on their phone during flights, leading to more instances of air rage. And on this, I think we're going to have to side with the airlines. Personally, I wish my health club would adopt a similar policy because I'm getting tired of going to work out and seeing a bunch of jackasses sitting at the weight stations looking at their phone as if they couldn't take a 45-minute break from their phone to work out or longer if they're going to do a longer workout. Good Lord. And how about this for an oddball story? Apparently, a 48-year-old Englishman who ran out of money while partying in Thailand asked his friends to beat him up and pose as kidnappers so his family would send a ransom. Police say Ian Robbie Day had his buddies repeatedly punch him in the face to create bruises and sent videos showing them wearing masks and holding him hostage. Instead of sending money, his panicked family called police, who burst into Day's hotel room. When we arrived, a police spokesman said they were having a party. All were charged with drug possession and faced deportation. And how about this item? An 80-year-old northern Indian man who'd been pronounced dead of heart failure was revived when the ambulance carrying his body struck a deep pothole. Darshan Singh Brar's grandson, who was in the ambulance when it hit the pothole, saw his grandfather's hand move, took his pulse, and alerted the driver. The ambulance had been transporting Brar to his family home where relatives had prepared wood for his cremation. He was then rerouted to a hospital. In another news regarding Indians narrowly avoiding death, we have this. Apparently, Indian model and actress Poonam Pandey announced on Instagram a couple weeks back that the 32-year-old movie star had died of cervical cancer. The Indian media published obituaries and eulogies, but the report was revealed to be a hoax one day later. Pandey now faces a public backlash and multiple lawsuits. One Instagram commenter said, "Worst PR stunt. Highly not appreciated." Pandey defended her ruse, saying it was part of an awareness campaign she'd worked on for months with a marketing agency to call attention to a type of cancer that kills over 75,000 Indians a year. "Yes, I faked my demise. Extreme, I know. But suddenly, we're all talking about cervical cancer, aren't we?" And in a final item from the oddball file, we have this from The Week magazine. Actually, The Week was reporting something that appeared in Reason, an article by Liz Wolfe, referring to Google's AI and how it's been caught demonstrating comically woke bias. It's noted that the world's sixth most valuable company last week had to shut down many of the image-generating features of its highly hyped Gemini artificial intelligence model because it insisted on making almost every image of a person it generated, even in historical events, non-white. It's noted that in Gemini's world, America's founding fathers are at least partially black, the Nazis are multi-ethnic, including blacks and Asians, and the Pope is a woman. Now, chatbots are trained on vast quantities of data, it is noted, and they've been criticized for amplifying racial and gender stereotypes. But as if to preemptively correct against existing bias, Google's engineers have gone overboard to the point of hilarious and extreme inaccuracy. And accompanying the piece is a photograph of a man in a Nazi uniform, Nazi helmet on, who is clearly a black man. Yay. Now, we can't say for sure, but we're pretty certain that given the racial bias of the Nazi regime, that there weren't a whole lot of black people in the Wehrmacht. At this point, Mr. Milne, I think we're going to jump into some animal news. For that, we may need some appropriate sound effects. Are you up to it?
Well, did you want me to imitate the animals or get a recording of the animals?
I think a sound effect would be better. Aww. All right, let's start with a donkey. Well, the good news, and it is good news about donkeys, is that at a summit in Ethiopia, the African Union announced a ban on the killing of donkeys for their hides. Apparently, and this is a startling statistic, apparently, nearly 6 million donkeys are killed every year so their skins can be boiled down to make ejiao, a traditional Chinese remedy in high demand for its unproven anti-aging and health benefits. Ejiao makers turn to Africa, home to 33 million of the world's 53 million donkeys, after the species was decimated in China. Apparently, half of Kenya's donkeys were killed in a recent four-year span, and Kenyan conservationist Calvin Solomon Onyango said that without the ban, within 6 years, donkeys could be joining rhinos and elephants as an endangered species in Africa. It should be added that many rural Africans rely on donkeys to carry water and goods, and a recent study found that owning even one of the animals can lift a family out of destitution. Yeah, we think that's a better use for donkeys than some crazy remedy. All right, let's go from donkeys to boars / pigs. According to The Economist magazine, when Canadian pig farmers were told in the 1980s that their animals' gene pool was thin, they turned to wild boars from Britain for fortification. They crossed the two, reportedly making an improved strain of domestic pig, yielding a longer creature with an extra rib and more meat per beast. Then, in 2001, the boar meat market plunged.
I remember that.
Yes, apparently some farmers unable to sell their stock simply released their hybrid pigs into the wild, which, you know, let's face it, can't be a good thing to do. Because today, those pigs' descendants roam the Canadian prairie provinces, a horde 62,000 strong. They reproduce at a clip and are well adapted to withstand the extreme winters, with thick fur and long legs that let them traipse through the snow. Their tusks are reportedly as sharp as steak knives. And some Canadian farmers now live in fear of discovering acres of crops plowed up by a herd of pigs. These animals are reportedly smart and adaptable. In the middle of those terrible Canadian winters, they've learned to burrow into the snowbank and remain comfortable. And apparently it's not just a Canadian problem. The pigs have now strayed across the border and are now causing worry in Minnesota. Well, I guess the focus on building a wall is now going to look north. All right, let's move on to cattle. Now, it is well known that the Hindu population of India regards the cow as a sacred animal. Now, it should be noted that the census, which has been conducted in India every decade since the 1880s, got postponed in 2021 owing to the COVID-19 pandemic and has not been rescheduled. But the BJP, the ruling party of India, has decided that counting cows is a different matter. The BJP government in the northern state of Uttar Pradesh, home to an estimated 240 million people and perhaps 20 million cattle, is conducting a new bovine census. The point of this, says the government, better cow protection. Yes, the party says it wants to protect cows, which are associated with divine beneficence and venerated by Hindus, but its pro-cow policies, including bans on cow slaughter, appear to be detrimental to cattle welfare. They're thought to be causing an increase in stray cows, typically male calves and aged milkers, which have little commercial value and get let loose by their owners. Where abandoned, they feed on rubbish, cause car crashes, and raid farmers' crops. There's an estimated 5 million stray cattle in India in 2019, including 1.2 million in Uttar Pradesh. The Economist notes that stray cattle have long been a menace in India, given the Hindu taboo on cow slaughter. Anti-slaughter laws, such as the one introduced by the UP government in 2017, have further reduced the options for farmers to dispose of unwanted animals. Almost all of India's 28 states now have laws banning cow slaughter. Now, to mitigate the problem, the BJP government in UP is promising to care for aging livestock. The government set up its own shelters and doled out subsidies to private ones. A shelter is mentioned in an article in near Delhi, where 160 cows are housed in a crowded neighborhood beside a busy road. The men who run it say they are using time off from their job as estate agents and bank clerks to serve mother cow. Well, all I can say to that is if you've ever been in an Indian bank, and I have, you'll realize why these guys have a lot of free time on their hands. Which really invites an anecdote, doesn't it, Mr. McMillan?
I think it does.
All right, I'm in Delhi. It's the late 1980s. We still use traveler's checks back in those days.
What are traveler's checks?
Very funny. Well, for those who don't know, it was a prepaid check. You could then negotiate in a foreign country for the stated amount on the check at a current exchange rate. I was low on cash and needed to convert a traveler's check into local currency. I went into a local bank, which was one of the main places that you would conduct such a transaction, to observe a number of clerks behind the counter, moving at what would be described, I think, as a glacial speed. One fellow I observed sitting at his desk with the traveler's check in his hand, staring at it for like, and I'm not kidding, 6 or 7 minutes. I don't know if he expected something to change during that interim. The people who are waiting in line ahead of me looked and said, it appears to be taking at least 45 minutes. It turned out that was an optimistic estimate. Foolishly, I decided to forsake cashing the check in a bank, figuring I could do it at my hotel, and went to have lunch instead. When I went to my hotel, they told me that they could not cash a traveler's check today because, well, it happened to be Good Friday. I was somewhat perplexed that in a Hindu and Muslim country that the Christian holiday of Good Friday would be a problem, but it was. Mr. Whelan points out that India does have a 2% Christian population, which I guess does add up when you got a billion people living in the place. Now, having battled the Indian bureaucracy before, I did something on this day that I've never done before and I've never done since. Feeling highly frustrated, I decided to take a sedative and take a nap, thinking that perhaps when I woke up, I would think of a solution to the problem. And, amazingly, it worked. I woke up, realized that I could traipse across town to the American Express office and get my check cashed there. Except, it was clearly going to take at least as much time in the American Express office as it would have back at the bank. Like the cow-tending bank clerks, the people in the American Express office were moving very, very slowly. An Indian gentleman behind me started to complain loudly about the lack of service and was told that, well, it's a change of shift and we've just had lunch, etc., etc. And he wasn't having it. I just need to cash a traveler's check, he announced. And the clerk behind him said, oh, if that's all you need, go to the office behind you. I grabbed the man by the arm and said, I'm following you. He chuckled, and wouldn't you know it, we both got our checks cashed. The entire process from stepping into the bank to getting my money was, I think, about 4 hours. Of course, it did include a nap. Mr. Whelan, we need to leave Indian cattle and move to California frogs. All right, the good news on this frog story from New Scientist magazine in January of this year is that wild populations of frogs in California seem to have evolved resistance to a lethal skin-eating fungal pathogen. Moving resistant frogs to habitats where the fungus has killed all the others appears to be an effective way to restore populations. Yes, the chytrid fungus, BD, has decimated populations of amphibian species around the world and contributed to the extinction of many. It infects the skin and ultimately causes heart failure. Conservationists have tried many methods to protect amphibians, including vaccinating them and altering their microbiomes, and had mixed results. But someone got the bright idea, why don't we take some frogs that appear to be resistant to this fungus, put them back in the habitat, see what happens. They did. The results were good. It looks as though frog populations are rebounding. In the 5 minutes we have left, we're looking for more good news items. And good news and Elon Musk don't often come in the same sentence. But writing in Business Insider, Grace Kay notes that Elon Musk has thrown down the gauntlet to OpenAI. The Tesla and X chief co-founded the leading AI developer, along with CEO Sam Altman, as a nonprofit. That was back in 2015. Last week, Musk sued OpenAI, claiming that it has thrown its public mission overboard. Musk left OpenAI in 2018, and Microsoft stepped in, furnishing the company's for-profit arm, and I don't know how you can have a nonprofit that has a for-profit arm, but I guess it did. They coughed up $13 billion, and Musk says that since then, OpenAI has been putting profit ahead of creating open-source technology that would benefit humanity. I remain a little unclear on what he was thinking when he was going along those lines, but we really like the idea of OpenAI being used to put out open source technology that would benefit humanity. What a concept. And then there's the matter of the self-driving car, something we've talked about many times on this program. Rather skeptically, the current issue of the week has in its briefing section a stalled dream of self-driving cars. It notes that there's been quite a few accidents associated with these vehicles. Since 2019, at least 17 deaths and 736 crashes have been linked to Tesla's Autopilot, which is not exactly a self-driving car. It's a driver assistance technology that, falls short of full automation. According to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration data, drivers are told to keep their hands on the wheel and stay observant when Autopilot is engaged, but, as we know, many don't. The piece notes that driverless robo-taxis are now available for hire in cities like San Francisco, Los Angeles, Phoenix, and Wuhan. But Waymo and Cruise are thought to be scaling back expansion plans after racking up huge losses. In fact, they quote engineer Anthony Lewandowski, an early pioneer of self-driving tech, is saying you'd be hard-pressed to find another industry that's invested so many dollars in R&D and that has delivered so little. Still, notes the article, there's estimates that the market for autonomous driving systems could be worth $400 billion by 2035, as many companies remain eager to replace their human drivers, who, after all, can get sick and, after all, need to be paid wages. The part about this briefing I like the best is the sidebar, which notes the following. For the past 2 years, San Francisco has served as a testing ground for hundreds of driverless taxis operated by firms like Cruise and Waymo. Not everyone there is happy. In the space of 6 months last year, the SF Fire Department recorded 55 incidents of self-driving cars interfering with rescue operations, from driving through yellow tape to parking between a fire truck and a burning car to stopping on top of a fire hose as firefighters were battling a blaze. Residents have also fumed about how the cars block city buses and occasionally stop dead in the middle of intersections. Here's the part I like. Some anti-driverless cars activists have started placing traffic cones on the car's hoods, which puts the vehicle into a panic mode, shutting it down until a human employee can remove the cone. One activist told The Guardian, "I know the city's not likely to ban robot cars, but what we're trying to do is move the needle in opposition to these vehicles, and it's working." I just want to note that yours truly confesses to having a traffic cone. What I plan to do with it, I'm not saying. I can show you a better time. Maybe you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star. This is Radio Parallax. I'm Douglas Everett, and after a short break, we're going to come back and speak with our good friend, investigative journalist, Jefferson Morley. Maybe.